We're going to be in Nehemiah chapter 12. Nehemiah chapter 12 is again another listing for us. This time it is a listing of the priests and the Levites who went up with Zerubbabel. Now remember, the first group to go up to Jerusalem from Babylon was headed by Zerubbabel and Joshua. Joshua was the high priest. Zerubbabel was a leader in Israel. And that was the largest contingent of Jews that returned to the land. Almost 50,000, over 50,000 actually, 52,000 returned with Zerubbabel and Joshua in that first time going. And we find here that Nehemiah records for us, so that we will have a record, the priests and the Levites that went up with that group. And we're not going to take time to read through all of those names. I just want to kind of briefly overview the entire chapter with you tonight. We're going to be basically just moving through the outline, and we'll highlight some of the verses that we go through. But again, we have a listing here, and we also have the dedication of the wall that is recorded here. And it was a beautiful, beautiful ceremony that was held for the dedication of the wall after its rebuilding. And we're going to see that tonight as we move through chapter 12. And then, Lord willing, as we get into the month of June, we're going to be studying chapter 13. We're going to take our time in chapter 13 because there is much to digest in that chapter. We're going to go through and probably spend at least two Wednesdays, possibly three Wednesday nights, in chapter 13, as we find here Nehemiah having to take a very strong stand with the children of Israel. As most things, everything has a tendency to do what? Degenerate. It always goes down. You go out and you can buy you a brand new vehicle, and in 10 years it's not going to be brand new, is it? It's almost a weekly basis that we go out and something's wrong. One of the locks is sticking and you can't get out the door. Or in our case recently, our CD player quit working. And so I found one online. I was being really smart, saving those dollars. I got me one on eBay, and it works, but it spits out the CD every time it plays two numbers. Two songs without fail. Boop, here it comes. You push it back in, then you have to click through. Well, what number was that on? And you click through. Two songs, boop, comes back out again. So I emailed the guy that I bought it from, and I said, listen, I said, I'd like to have a replacement. This one's not working like it's supposed to. I had a 90-day warranty with it. And he was very kind. He emailed me back last night, and he said, I'm just going to send you a refund check. Keep the equipment, please. That was the thing. So we're going to get used to hearing two songs and pushing that CD back in there until I can find me another CD player. I'm kind of cheap when it comes to those things. But, you know, vehicles get old. Houses get old. We've been in our house now 8 years, and I'm having to go around and fix things, especially closet doors. There's something about closet doors that they seem to wear out first, and spending a lot of time putting them back in there, putting new tracks in, having to fix things. And of course, my wife is a rearranger, so I spend a lot of time moving things, stapling things back up, nailing things back up, and fixing up. It's just everything is in a situation of degeneration. And within months of all of these wonderful things that have taken place, the wall has been rebuilt in record time, 52 days. They've had this wonderful ceremony in which they bring large choirs, two of them, and they walk the wall of the city, one going one way and the other choir leading another group, Nehemiah leading one section and Ezra leading the other one. Beautiful scene it must have been from a distance. As a matter of fact, the singing and the celebration was so loud that we are told here in this passage in verse 43 that it was heard even afar off. The singing of the choirs and the musical instruments could be heard echoing from the Mount Zion throughout the valley. They could hear the sound of the music and the wonderful celebration, and within months of all that taking place, they've got the same old sin starting to come back up again. Intermarriage with the wrong people. All of the things that were talked about, and they said, oh, we make a covenant. We won't do these things. And what did they do? They go right back to doing the same thing. Sin is found in the camp, and Nehemiah has to take a very strong stand. Now, folks, we are finding today in fundamentalism, and I want to say this at the outset before we even get there, that today strong stands are being looked down upon. You don't make strong stands anymore. You take strong stands, you take it in the neck. We get all kinds of stuff. We've had a series of articles in the projector on the softening and fundamentalism, and we get all kinds of mail. Take me off the mailing list. I don't want to receive things like that. Well, what are we taught? What did we say that was wrong? We're saying so, and that's exactly what's happening today. We've got contemporary music in the churches. We've got the world in our churches, and we love to have it so. And when you say there's softness there, people don't want you to tell the truth. They want to know that what they're doing is right in their own eyes. And you take a stand, you take it in the neck. People don't appreciate that. And so here Nehemiah takes a very, very strong stand. You want to read chapter 13, you'll find out just how strong it was. He ruffled some feathers. It got so bad that they were pulling hair out of people's chins. You want to know how bad it was? You read through that chapter there. He had to get serious with some folks. As a matter of fact, one of the priests invited Tobiah to come live in the temple. The renovated temple, they invited him to come and they fixed up a chamber for him. Their enemy! How could such a thing be? People said, well, it's all over with. We rebuilt the wall. The temple's rebuilt. And you know, old mean Nehemiah, he had us holding weapons up against Tobiah, but you know, Tobiah's one of our relatives. And so they all began to think the battle is over with. That's what the mentality was. Oh, we don't have to fight anymore. We've got the walls built. We've got the temple built. So all the battles are over with. They're not fighting against us anymore. They're not trying to destroy us. So that means the battle's over. We can go put our armor away and enjoy what we have here. And the next thing you know, they've got their arm around the enemy and they've got him living in the temple in one of the chambers. And Nehemiah went in there and said, bring in a crew. Let's get the furniture out of here. And they went and took Tobiah's furniture out and they chunked it outside the city gate. Within months, they've got their arms around it. You want to know how quickly compromise will do its work? It doesn't take years. It just takes weeks. It just takes weeks. All we'd have to do is bring a little contemporary Christian music into this church and we'd be putting chairs all the way to the back. You understand? We know how to do it. We do it like some of the other churches do. You bring in the contemporary music. You start bringing in the music groups to take a Sunday night service. We won't have any preaching on Sunday night. We'll bring in the music groups and you can fill it up just like that. And what were they doing? The temple's freshly done. They've restored the worship and they bring the enemy into the camp and say, here, have a special room in the temple. That's how compromise works, folks. It doesn't take a lot of time. You can destroy the work of separation in a heartbeat. Purity has to be maintained. It's difficult. It's struggle. Not very many people are going to join your side in the battle for truth, in the battle for separation and seeking to honor the Lord and keep the music right and keep the standards high. Not very many people are joining those ranks. They want to join with the crowd that's loosening things, right? Which way should standards be going? Which way does the world always take standards? Down. Always down. I was reading about the 1920s, the roaring 20s. Everybody ever read about the 20s? It was a time, as Hollywood said, it was a time of decadence, where the lowering of standards took place. Wholesale, across the board. It was the time of the liquor crowds. It was the time of the dressing down, where the women stopped wearing undergarments to flaunt themselves. Yeah, the roaring 20s. And what did we have after that? We had the Great Depression. We had in 1929, we had the crash of the market and suicides going places and everything just went south after that. The roaring 20s crashed. America has been in that cycle, where the standards go down and then we kind of pick it back up a little bit and lift the standards a little bit and then it goes right back down again. And now we've got to the point where today, did you read about it in the news today? Where now teachers and principals in middle schools, 13-year-old girls took nude pictures of themselves on their cell phone and emailed it to their boyfriends. They were sent on cell phones to all of the boys in the school, these pictures. They went and collected over 700 cell phones in the school. Many of them had the pictures already on there. Middle school. All right? Middle school. Where is the morals today? Where it's all right to take a picture of yourself and send it to your boyfriend. You know what it is? It's Romans chapter 3. Romans chapter 3. There is no fear of God before their eyes. We're right back in the Garden of Eden after Adam willfully sinned. Shame. That's where we are today. And if we're not careful, our churches are going to end up right in the toilet with our culture. Pardon the expression. It's going to end up right at the bottom. We're already there, folks. We are facing things with younger and younger children today that we've never faced before. I have to face things that I have not faced as a director out here at the YAC program. We're having to deal with parents with their little four-year-olds that are using words that I don't even know, that are brought to my attention. What kind of words are they using? Talking back to their coaches. I have to go get the parents and say, this is not acceptable. We can't have this out here. I didn't have to deal with that when we began the pre-T program in 1986. We had parents that wouldn't put up with blowing a bubble gum pop out on the field. You're not going to chew bubble gum out here. You're going to pay attention to the game. And now we got dirty language in the mouths of our children. What's happened? We lowered the standard of what we allow. And now people can't even blush anymore. It's funny. It's funny. And so what are we doing in our Christian colleges and Christian schools and churches? We're lowering the standard. We're trying to keep up with culture. Oh, if they look at us in a tie and the shirt and they say, oh, those are the Jehovah's Witnesses. Those are the Mormons. We don't want to be identified with them. Let's lower the standard. That's not a reason to lower the standard. So what? They confuse me with the manager at Walmart. Did we not today when we were out at Walmart? They didn't have a tie on. Had a lady come up to me and said, can you help me load this stuff up here, please? She thought I was working out there and that we picked up some plants and stuff to plant out here in the front. She thought I was working. Hey, where's the crew at? That's the way it is. Does that mean I'm going to go now put on some jeans and a t-shirt so I don't get confused with the manager of Walmart? Or I might get confused with the Jehovah's Witnesses that walk 2x2 or the Mormons that walk 2x2? Folks, we're letting culture set the standard for us. And not saying, all right, we're going to do what's right. We're going to do what's right. We're going to set our standards and we're going to keep them high. If we lose students, we lose students. If we're going to upset people, we're going to upset people. If people down the street don't like it, well, then they just won't like it. They didn't like Jesus either. They don't like the Lord. So what we're going to do is we're going to end up looking worse than the culture, because religion always goes further than the culture does. Isn't it interesting that what does God call the great whore at the end of the times of the tribulation? Does He call, it's not Rome. Doesn't say Rome. It's religion. The great whore is religion. And God destroys it first. And then He destroys the commercial Babylon. Why does He destroy religion first? Because religion goes further in sin and calls it righteousness. And God says, I'm not going to have that. No, I'm going to wipe it off first. So if you want to be wiped out first, then you go on to hell with the rest of the group with your religion. That's the way it is. Religion's going to be in hell first. Mark it down. You want to be the first one to hell? Then you stick on with religion, because that's where you're headed. Folks, this is serious business. My heart grieves for our children today. My heart grieves for our children today. They don't know how to blush anymore. They don't know what to blush at. because we've got so much sin around us. Folks, we need to understand our redemption draweth nigh. The trump's going to sound. Are you ready? Will you recognize the sound of the trumpet? Oh, I love this world too much. I love the things of this world. I've got so many plans that I want to carry out. Forget about your plans. Lord, even so, come, Lord Jesus, is the prayer of the child of God. It ought to be the prayer on the lips of college students and Bible colleges across America and around the world. It is in some of them. I know South India Baptist Bible College, when I was there, that was the cry of those young people there, because they've got it tough. They've got it hard. Those Bible students over in Myanmar whose Bible college was completely destroyed by the cyclone are still meeting. You know where they're meeting? They're having their Bible classes outside on the remnants of what's left of their Bible college. You know what would happen in America if our Bible colleges got wiped out? We'd shut down completely. Oh, we can't do this. We don't have air conditioning. We can't do this. We can't feed them. What are we going to do? You'd find out how much character we'd have in that. But no, they're meeting. They're meeting. You go over to the Mindanao Evangelistic Institute over there right now where they're meeting in the worst part of town. As a matter of fact, the Bible college president there can't even leave the country because our United States has said anybody coming out of Mindanao can't come to this country because it's considered to be a Muslim threat. His teachers have not been paid their full salary in 6 months. They're still meeting. They're still having their Bible college classes. They're still meeting in the squalor of the slum, studying their Bibles, and happy to do so. And we're worried about what we're going to wear. Oh, they're not letting us wear what we want to wear. Let me tell you something, folks. We got our priorities all messed up. It's the same condition Nehemiah faced after the great victories that were won, fought and won, and then the slide started. Slide downward. And Nehemiah got in front of the slide and he stopped it. And he said, we're not going to go any further. We're going to take it right back up where we had it. We're going to have more enemies. We're going to have less of our friends. But we're going to honor the Lord. Bless God. Now, I've got to deviate it tonight. But I think it's important because this chapter right here sets the tone. Sets the tone. Everybody's happy, jubilant. Oh, isn't this wonderful? The walls are done. But immediately, the slide has already started. Going down, cutting corners, trimming our way to seek love with the enemies of God. If you don't have any enemies tonight, something's wrong with you. If you don't have any enemies here tonight, something's wrong. You are not identified with Christ. Don't talk about being, oh, I'm crucified with Christ. I've been identified with Him. Wait a minute. How many were standing by Jesus on the cross? Well, they all fled. They all fled. They paid the price, though. Identified with Christ, you're going to have enemies, folks. He'll take you as you are, but He's going to change you and make you into something different. He never takes somebody as they are and leave them the same. No, it doesn't work that way. And we've got churches today all across this country that says, come as you are and stay as you are. We'll just put a little label on there that says Christian. And you can have your rock music and your Christian rock music, and you can have all your Christian rock stars, and you can have all that kind of stuff, and you can have Jesus too. We've lost the attitudes of the Scriptures today. We've lost the Nehemiah attitudes, and we're going to, Lord willing, by God's grace, resurrect them here when we get into chapter 13. It may make some of you angry. If you're not interested in staying with Christ and identifying with His reproach outside the camp, remember that from Hebrews? Bearing His reproach outside the camp, you say, well, I want to be inside the camp. Well, that's where the devil's crowd is. That's where religion's crowd is. Inside the camp. Well, here in the first 26 verses of Nehemiah chapter 12, we have a listing of the priests and the Levites. It's interesting that there's only 22 leaders of the priests mentioned here in these verses 1 through 7. If you think back in your Hebrew history, there were 24 priestly groups that were established by King David. 24 of them. Only 22 are mentioned by Nehemiah. Now, there have been many scholars that have said, well, perhaps they forgot to do that. I think more likely it is there were two orders that did not return from Babylon back to Jerusalem. And the Bible makes it clear here that there were only 22 who were faithful to God's command. The two other groups were evidently left over in Babylon. They refused to come or didn't want to come or something happened. But they are not included as those who came back with Zerubbabel. And Nehemiah does not update them some 50 years later. He does not update and say the other two joined with us when we came back. Does not do it. He just indicates 22 came and gives no further updates. So we find that even among the ranks of the priests and the Levites, there was a spirit of rebellion of not following God's word to come back from Babylon into the land of promise. They were content to stay in the land and follow after the traditions of the Babylonians. Very small contingent. As a matter of fact, out of 3 million Israelites that are believed to have gone into captivity, the total number that returned in the three groups was 62,000 people. Very small minority. By the way, that's how the Lord works. It's a remnant. It's a godly remnant. Always is. Very small group of people that follow after the Lord. We find in verses 8 and 9 the names of 8 of the Levites who returned unto Zerubbabel, including all of their associates. And if you total those up, it'll be around 74. And if you include the Levite singers that are included in Ezra chapter 2, verses 40 and verses 41, there would have been about 202 Levite singers. Now, this group right here were involved in the two choirs that sang, probably around 100 in each choir that walked the walls, as we're going to see later on in this particular chapter, and we're not going to get very far with that tonight. We're told also, on the point 2 under B there, about two men, Mattaniah and Bakbukiah. These should not be confused with men by the same names in Nehemiah's day in chapter 11 and verse 17. You'll find over and over again in the different generations that people had the same names. They would pass them down. They may have been even in the same families. The tribe of Benjamin, Saul, was a very, very repetitive name over and over again among the Benjamites, a very favorite name that was used. So here these two men are not to be confused with the men who lived in Nehemiah's day back in chapter 11 and verse 17 that we read about last time. It should be noted that the work of these men seemed to have been similar, that of leading songs of thanksgiving. They evidently were from a musical family. These were the song leaders. All right. Now verses 10 and 11, many generations of the high priest extended from Aaron all the way up to Jehozadak, who went into exile in Babylon. Their names are listed here. Joshua's descendant, Eliashib, Joshua being the one that came back with Zerubbabel, he was the high priest, verse 10, was the high priest in Nehemiah's day. The reference to Eliashib's line to Jaddua three generations later poses no problem chronologically, for Eliashib's great-grandson was born while Nehemiah was still living. So you have three generations referred to here. That's not a problem, because some of the critical scholars have said, oh, this indicates that this couldn't have been written by Nehemiah, because three generations are listed here, and Nehemiah would have been too old. Well, that's not the case. He could have very well been alive when these grandsons were serving there at that particular time. Go down to D, verses 12 through 21 here, and we'll finish this little section up. These verses list the heads of the priest family in the days of Jehoiakim, the son of Jeshua the high priest, listed in verse 10. 20 names are listed here, corresponding roughly to the 22 names in verses 1 through 7, speaking of the 22 heads of the orders of priests that David had established during his reign. The spellings are somewhat similar in the Hebrew text, different in the English text in verses 12 through 21, comparing them. The spellings, verses 22 through 26, Darius is probably Darius II, who ruled in Persia from 423 to 404 B.C. According to the Elephantine Papyri, Johanan was high priest in 408 B.C. Nehemiah probably lived to see Jehoiachin's son, Jaddua, become high priest between 408 and 404 B.C. So Nehemiah probably lived through three different high priests during his lifespan. The book of Annals that's mentioned here in this passage of Scripture is the official record book of the Levite family leaders up to the days of Jehoiachin. The Levites mentioned in verses 24 and 25 served in the days of Jehoiakim and in the days of Nehemiah and Ezra. Sherebiah and Jeshua are mentioned in verse 8 as being involved in leading songs of thanksgiving, which were sung antiphonally. Mattaniah and Bakbukiah were associated with music, chapter 12, verse 8, and also here in verse 25, they were listed as gatekeepers. So they had a position of authority in the security realm as well as being involved in the singing. And that indicates to us that laymen are to be involved in the singing of praise to the Lord. As we're going to see this unfold at the dedication, there's going to be two large choirs. They're going to sing. The people are going to join them in congregational singing. Tremendous emphasis here on praising the Lord for His goodness and protection during the building of the walls. And we'll get into that more next time as we begin at verse 27 and look through the end of the chapter when we get into the month of June.